This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 22nd of November 2024. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I am accompanied in the studio by readers Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Jill Russell.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on the number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. College accused of covering up abuse, Boomtown facing tougher new rules, and communities beams of joy. And the first headline story, Nick, please.
College accused of covering up abuse. Winchester College has been accused of assisting in a cover-up of the abuse carried out on dozens of boys by local barrister John Smythe. The recent Makin report, which led to the resignation of the Archbishop of Canterbury, has also found that the boarding school did not report Smythe to the police, although it was aware of his actions, preferring to deal with the matter internally. As well as this, doubts have emerged over the validity of the claims of former headmaster John Thorne that all parties involved had expressed their belief it was better to keep the matter private. One victim told the inquiry that Mr. Thorne, the headmaster, was lying when he claimed in 1982 that he had consulted all the other parents and that everyone wanted to keep it a secret. Mr. Thorne died in October 2023. Smythe had led the Christian Forum at the school, but in 1982 was forced out for abusing at least 22 pupils, 16 of whom were beaten and 6 groomed. They were as young as 13. The school did not report him to police, leaving Smythe free to continue his abuse elsewhere. The college's own internal report, published in 2022, came to similar conclusions as the Makin review, pointing out that not all the victims' parents were consulted about going to the police, a move which may have stopped Smythe's continued abuse. However, in 2017, when a Channel 4 investigation unearthed Smythe's abuses, Winchester insisted nothing was held back in 1982. It admitted it had failed to report matters to the police, but presented this as a sign of its caring approach. Another element which came to light, both in the Makin report and the college's internal review, was the fanatical element of the Christian Forum, an evangelical group within the school which has been called a cult. According to the Winchester College Review, Mark Stibb, one of Smythe's victims and former pupil, described the sense of superiority and elitism inherent in membership of the Christian Forum. He said Smythe and his cult members were those who had chosen the right road. The spiritual pride here is grotesque. Combined with the elitism already embedded in the boarding school culture, this sense of spiritual authority created a lethal cocktail. When the Chronicle contacted the college, it said, in January 2022, Winchester College published an independent review into John Smythe's abuse of former pupils, which highlighted the school's failure to prevent the abuse and its further failure in 1982 to prevent Smythe from moving overseas, where he continued to commit horrific acts of abuse against children. We wish to acknowledge the courage and determination of the victims in pursuing the truth about John Smythe, and we apologise unreservedly for the college's part in their terrible experiences.
Boomtown facing tougher new rules. Boomtown's organisers are facing tough questions over its licence after a man died and 29 people broke bones at last year's event. Police have called for a review of its licence and have branded the festival as unacceptable for allowing festival goers to enter the event with illegal drugs. They said that it cannot continue operating in the same manner. A review will take place at Winchester City Council's Licensing Committee on Monday, November the 25th. Police wanted the review following the death of a 22-year-old man at this year's event in August. Their application states that it relates to the prevention of crime and disorder. The application said, "This is not the first death that has occurred at Boomtown Fair, and not the first from an overdose of unlawful drugs. A recent event debrief involving all partner agencies and the event organisers also revealed some other shocking statistics. There were 29 reported fractured bones from this five-day event, which would have clearly overrun the already stretched facilities at the local hospital. When it came to this statistic, they were, in the words of the police licensing officer in attendance at the debrief, PC Phil Dennett, glossed over. The application continues, "This event is a licensed premises. It operates upon the same premises license as any other venue permitted to do so by Winchester City Council. It must uphold the same four licensing objectives and it must adhere to the same mandatory conditions. Yet, unlike any other venue in Winchester or any other festival in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, it permits persons who have been searched upon entry and found to be in possession of unlawful drugs into their event. This event cannot continue operating in the same manner. If it does, people will get unnecessarily injured, people will suffer from life-changing experiences, and more young lives will be cut short. To mitigate this, additional conditions are sought that read, 1. Any person entering the event and found to be in possession of unlawful drugs shall be refused entry. 2. Any person in possession of unlawful drugs shall be ejected unless there is an immediate medical reason not to." Several members of the public have commented on the review, with 17 letters supporting the police. Sue Herdman of Cheriton said, "I have personally never attended the festival, but the people who I have spoken to have been shocked at the blatant abuse of drugs in plain sight of other festival goers. It seems strange that the law is not followed or enforced just because the event is taking place in the countryside." Boomtown said in a statement, "Minimising the risk of harm from drugs is of vital importance in every area of public life and is built into the foundations of everything we do at Boomtown. Preventing illegal substances entering the festival is, of course, the first line of harm reduction and our security and search arrangements are as robust as any event of this kind. However, as the Chief Officer of Police is quoted in the application for review of our premises licence, not all unlawful drugs will or could be prevented from entering this event, or any event or venue for that matter. As Boomtown has grown over the years, in full cooperation with the police, Winchester and Hampshire councils, the Safety Advisory Group and independent experts in the field, we have made significant investment to develop a multi-layered approach beyond the gates to tackle this challenge head on. In this, we have often led the industry in practical and data-driven measures which have provided valuable results and insight for all those working, like us, to reduce the harm from illegal substance use. Peveril Bruce, who runs the Matterley estate, declined to comment.
Community beams of joy. The city centre was filled with joy when a community hero turned on the Christmas lights. On Thursday, November the 14th, Winchester was packed with hundreds of people keen to celebrate the start of the festive season. Organised by Winchester Bid, the entertainment kicked off at 4:30 p.m. in the Broadway with Heart Radio and a number of live performances. Also taking to the stage were groups such as Hairstock Primary School Choir, the Pilgrim School Chamber Choir, and Rubik's Cube. Crowds were also entertained by Winchester A Cappella, Integrate Dance, Theatre Royal Winchester, Rock Choir, and Diva Academy. Every year the lights are turned on by a nominated community hero. This year, George Hatt, two T's, and his sister Jess, with a duo to make Winchester festive. George, aged 25, has been diagnosed with grade 4 glioblastoma, an aggressive type of brain cancer. He underwent surgery in early April and was told by doctors that he had just 18 months to live. Since his diagnosis, George's family have started to fundraise to complete items on his bucket list. The Hats Off to George team wants to spread awareness for the Brain Tumour charity to further their efforts in finding a cure. According to Winchester Bid, George and his sister Jess received 83% of nominations to be the event's local hero to switch on the lights. The young man does not know how long he has to live, but he has been fundraising for the Brain Tumour charity since his diagnosis last year. Writing on their GoFundMe page after the event, Jess said, "We just want to thank every single person that has supported us this year. We are absolutely overwhelmed with the support we have received and are continuing to receive every day. When we started the year in 2024, we never expected our year to be turned upside down with the news of George's diagnosis and the devastating facts that went with that. All we can say is that our faith in the community has been restored with the love, respect and support we've been shown. If you take anything away from our message, just know that you get one life and it is so important what you do with that life. So do the things that make you happy, surround yourself with loving, positive people and take every opportunity you can."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I will go on with the death notices now, and Nick will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Barnes, Middleton Morris, known as Mid or Barney, passed away on the 2nd of November 2024, surrounded by loved ones, aged 83 years. Bartlett, Brenda Marion, sadly passed away at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 28th of October 2024, aged 86 years. Baisley, Michael Lewis Henry of Southwark, died aged 97 years on the 15th of November 2024. Denham, Julia Ann, known as Julie, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on Monday the 28th of October 2024, aged 82 years. Geary, Robert Arthur, passed away peacefully on the 21st of October 2024, aged 97 years. Haler, Norman, passed away peacefully following a short illness on the 8th of November 2024, aged 87 years. Hibbard, Shanak Mary, known as Sheila, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 9th of November 2024, aged 91 years. McGrath, Linda Christine, passed away peacefully at home on the 12th of November 2024, aged 69 years. Mould, Sandy, passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 4th of November 2024, aged 77 years. Parfit, Gary Frank. Gary passed away peacefully on the 31st of October at Winchester Hospice, aged 78. Piper, Barbara, died peacefully in hospital on the 4th of November 2024. Smith, Jean, passed away peacefully at Tegfield House, Winchester, on Friday the 1st of November 2024, aged 94 years. Squire, Myra, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 1st of November 2024, aged 77 years. Swaysland, Jennifer, known as Jenny, passed away at home in Compton on the 3rd of November 2024, aged 74 years. Tripp, Charles, MBE, passed away peacefully on the 22nd of October 2024, aged 81 years. And Woods, John, fell asleep on the 8th of November 2024. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. The title is Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Your Anger. Thank you, Nick.
As the evenings get darker, I often think about a line which is sensible, important, and deeply poetic. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. It comes from the New Testament, from St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 4, verse 26. I asked a knowledgeable friend about this, and she researched it and said, "It's only found here in the Bible, although plenty elsewhere about anger." A similar phrase is also found in a text of around the same time, written by the Greek philosopher Plutarch. It may have been a more generally known saying stroke proverb in circulation at the time, although there's not enough evidence to prove that. So, apart from that, the idea seems to resonate generally with people across time and space. I think the origin of the saying is Ephesians. Most people are familiar with it, and it also features in literature. For example, in Little Women by Louisa M. Alcott, this 19th century book, a permanent bestseller which has enthralled generations of young people, has a deeply Christian ethos. The heroine, Jo, becomes understandably and justifiably angry with her younger sister, Amy. And their mother says, "My dear, don't let the sun go down upon your anger. Forgive each other, help each other, and begin again tomorrow." Jo cannot bring herself to obey, and there are dramatic results. There are other translations, as with all biblical phrases. For example, "Do not stay angry all day." And I've heard a modern version of the advice, don't go to bed cross, which also does the job. There is more to it than an order from above. It's not just about forgiving or making peace with those who wrong you. Realistically, we know that you will get a better night's sleep if everything is sorted. It's pretty awful to lie awake at night going over the rights and wrongs of some situation, having those imaginary conversations. Another useful piece of advice, not quite the same, is that if you are annoyed enough to write an angry email, then do so, but put it in your drafts folder and leave it there for 24 hours. At that point, you will probably delete it and write something more peaceable. So, don't go to bed cross. Don't press send just yet. In the case of Little Women, don't get so angry with your little sister that she falls through the ice and nearly drowns. That's a fair set of rules to live a life by, even though St. Paul can't have imagined the world of emails. But the sun's setting hasn't changed in 2,000 years. The words resonate and count for something exactly as they did then. Maybe sunset can be a reminder at whatever time it comes, around 4 p.m. right now. We can think about what we have left undone, unresolved, or unhappy, and try to sort it out. In November, that means you can enjoy a long, cosy evening feeling happy in yourself, at peace with the world, and at peace with whoever annoyed you today. And that's from Moira Redmond.
Thank you, Nick. And now this week's letters to the editor. Paul, could you start us off with cover-up, yes, please?
This comes from a frequent correspondent to the Chronicle, Andrew Rutter, a Quaker friend. Once again, one hears of a damning report at national level into wrongdoing, in this case barrister John Smith. What makes it worse is that eminent contemporaries knew that he was a paedophile as long ago as 2013, and did nothing effective to stop him. And he's allowed to go to Africa, where he continued damaging young boys until he died. In all, some 130. This sort of cover-up seems all too prevalent in our society. Surely we should be trying to eliminate the sort of situations which potentially tempt people to practice paedophile behaviour. Many boys' boarding schools had a practice called fagging, which paired young boys with older ones to help each other, creating an unequal power relationship at a time when the older boys were exploring their awakening sexual feelings. I'm sure that many of these relationships were beneficial, but inevitably some were dubious and difficult for a housemaster to detect. For years, these schools have trained people who have gone on to be eminent in their occupations and even our leaders. After school, many opportunities for paedophile practices arose in valuable summer camps for boys, where parents trusted their organisations and were grateful that people volunteered to run them. However, in both cases, young boys could be too terrified to complain about their mistreatment. The fagging system is unnecessary for a boy's development, and this system should be abolished. However, it is very important that teenagers should be taught that relationships, girls and women, should be built on a cooperative basis, not a control basis, which is outdated in our 21st century. Instead of listening and discussion to solve problems, control leads to resentment, arguments that worsen and lead to violence against women and girls, which now seems like a modern disease, leading to the breakup of families and danger to children. This report should lead to the abandonment of double standards in the way we live. Andrew Rutter, Quaker, St John's Road.
James Freeman, who people may recognise as his connection with Friends of King Alfred Buses, but also one of our bus drivers, writes on the bus debate. Last week's Hampshire Chronicle covers two stories that affect bus services in our city. Firstly, the all-important future of the bus station, and secondly, the experimental pedestrian crossing on Romsey Road by Clifton Terrace. I am a bus industry professional with experience dating back to the 1970s and have also made a careful study of local bus operations in our congested city, covering the 100 years or so since 1920, and I'd like to comment on both issues. The idea of locating a bus station close to the trains at the railway station is superficially attractive, but makes no sense in a city where the centre lies to the east of where most of the population lives. Thus, people coming from Worthy Road, Andover Road, Stockbridge Road and Romsey Road naturally come past the station, but they need their services to run on down into the city centre. We certainly ought to have excellent bus to train connections, and I cannot see from the recent station consultation how this might be achieved, but certainly not a bus terminus at the railway station, which lies at the extreme west of the central area and on rising ground. I'm very relieved to read that Councillor Martin Todd understands that, though I am not so sure that I agree with him that Winchester needs no central bus terminus. He comments, correctly, that Brighton bus services run very successful without a central bus station. But he forgets that Winchester does not have Brighton's extensive bus priority schemes, and Brighton does not have an equivalent of Winchester's central car park. I mention that just as we are running up into the pre-Christmas rush, when cars are already blocking city streets queuing for the car parks, with a catastrophic effect on bus reliability, including the city's own park and ride service. It is therefore important that some sort of terminus in the bottom part of the town needs to be found to replace what we currently have in the bus station, so that buses can stand long enough to provide some necessary resilience and reliability in operation. Meanwhile, I disagree wholeheartedly with your reader Carol Orchard about the effect and the effectiveness of the new pedestrian traffic lights on Romsey Road. These were introduced to allow people to cross the main road from Clifton Terrace, which used to be a nightmare. I drive buses regularly up and down Romsey Road at all times of the day, and I have been very pleasantly surprised by the very lack of congestion caused by these lights. And whereas previously pedestrians had to take their life in their hands to cross the road, with a complicated junction and fast traffic unwilling to give way, now they can cross the road in relative safety, with no more than a momentary pause to traffic. So that's a win in my book, and I hope that the experimental arrangement, which could do with a little tidying up, becomes permanent. The price of all this, of course, is much longer queues at the Stockbridge Road arm of the City Road lights, and that does lead to lengthy delays for buses heading into town at busy times, and also creates problems when queuing traffic stacks up under the railway arch and beyond. This certainly needs attention, but I hope that the experimental lights at Clifton Terrace in due course become permanent. And that letter's from James Freeman, Highcroft Road, Winchester.
Bedford of Bitton Park, Southampton, writes on buses as well, but this time drunks on buses. I note County Councillor Nick Adams-King proposes to increase bus usage. Have councillors actually used buses? Should they not carry out a survey to discover why people don't use buses? I have a bus pass and rarely use the bus. One reason, I have arthritis, and a double-decker bus has 12 accessible seats downstairs and 14 seats which have to be accessed by a steep step. Why is this? I have asked, but no one seems to know. It has two spaces for buggies and one disabled vehicle. The majority of seating is upstairs, with drunk passengers, noisy phones, loud phone calls. It's not very clean and very slow. Earlier in the year, I caught the number 3 bus from Southampton Bargate to Eastleigh. You can do the drive in 20 minutes, but the bus took 90 minutes, not because of any problems. The 12 route is through Thornhill, Hedge End, Botley, Bawley Green and Fair Oak. My grandson asked if we were ever going to get there. People want speed, efficiency and cleanliness. Buses need a conductor late at night to control drunks. And this letter is from P. Bedford, Newton Road, Bitton Park, Southampton.
This letter is entitled Trunk Call. It comes from a distinguished retired architect, Kate McIntosh. At the recent meeting of Oram's Arbor Residents Association, the question of the management of the magnificent trees surrounding this much-valued public open space on West Hill was discussed. In particular, this focused on what was in November 2021, the partial felling of an ancient beech on its southwest corner, the tallest tree of the group, after a single branch was torn off in a gale. The ugly mutilated remains of this tree were left reminding us of our loss under the fallacious theory that it might spring fresh shoots from the stumps of its dismembered limbs. We are well aware of the value of retaining the remains of felled trees to encourage biodiversity, but that does not require the timber to remain vertical. Rather, if it were felled from the base of the substantial trunk, which showed no sign of rot in the exposed cross-sections of severed branches other than the one that had dropped, it could be shaped to form play sculptures and benches, enriching the experience for many children and families who use this open space. Kate McIntosh, MBE, Fellow of the Royal Institute of British Architects.
And it's back to buses again now, with a letter entitled What a Clown, from Terry Revell. To the councillor who thinks it is a good idea to move Winchester bus station to the railway station, he obviously does not use the buses, or if he does, he must have eyesight problems. I watched the buses coming into the bus station last week and was amazed how full they were when arriving and departing, and how many people were either old or infirm or both, along with their walking sticks, pull-along baskets and walking frames. There are 3 supermarket-type stores within a 5-minute walk of the bus station: Marks & Spencer, Sainsbury's and Iceland. Does he think these people can walk all the way from the railway station to the bottom of the town and back again? This councillor should apply for a job at Disney World as a clown. And that's from Terry Revell, Meadowcroft Close, Otterbourne.
Democracy Hit, a letter from Stuart Pocock of Romsey. Local democracy seems to have taken a hit. Developers are putting in speculative planning applications that are not in the local area plan and are in the countryside, safe in the knowledge that if their application gets refused by the council, then it goes on to the planning inspectorate. This body will have little knowledge of the locality and will be working towards the new government's guidelines on increasing building supply. Surely this is bad for democracy and undermines our planning officers, councillors and all those who voted for them. From Stuart Pocock, Jermyn's Lane, Romsey.
Cutting corners. In relation to your feature, unpleasant places to walk, I would like to nominate the corner of St James's Lane and St Cross Road. This is a busy pedestrian route to and from town. The footpath, or pavement, sidewalk, is narrow, poorly surfaced and contoured, plus the corner is blind. Pedestrians are in danger of being hit by van wing mirrors. The worst feature is the tendency of cars, and particularly vans, to routinely cut the corner when turning left, at some danger to pedestrians. My local councillors say that they have no powers to change or improve the situation. This is from Malcolm Lemon, Southgate Villas, St James's Lane.
Battery Butcher. I was pleased to see that Westlands Farm Shop has opened in Winchester and wish it much success. But I was astonished to read the statement that there had been no butcher in Winchester for 15 years. Is Oliver's Battery not considered to be part of Winchester? This might more accurately have been expressed as in Winchester city centre. Oliver's Battery has had an excellent butcher throughout the 20 years or so that I have lived here, and for well before that, and it attracts customers from a much wider area. My husband, the late David Lloyd, who lived here for at least 60 years, knew Edwin, who ran and still works in the shop, now New Forest Family Butchers, which he was a trainee butcher in Winchester. And that letter's from Rosemary Dunhill, Sunnydown Road, Oliver's Battery, Winchester, and there is an editor's note attached to it. Technically, Oliver's Battery is not part of Winchester, but point taken.
A letter on aid from overseas from Jane Harding, St Cross. I was delighted to read Tom Williams' letter about his excellent experience at the Winchester Hospital, but also about our need to bring hard-working staff from overseas to support the teams, Chronicle, November 14th. Many years ago, Winchester Visitors Group supported asylum seekers who had arrived in this country and were instantly thrown into prison. In Winchester Prison, I visited a wonderful young man from Cameroon, with only one eye and heavily scarred, who had been left for dead in the road for handing out political leaflets. He was found and hidden in the hills, where he spent his time taking a computer apart to see how it worked. When danger approached again, he was put on a plane to England, where he was thrown into jail. He only spoke French and had no idea where he was. Luckily, the WVG managed to set up an asylum claim for him, and I took him to London as quickly as possible to receive his refugee status. He was then able to find a flat to rent and start earning his own living, mending computers, rather than costing the country a fortune every day. He married and had two children, a wonderful, positive man with whom I am still in touch. Surely speeding the asylum claims must be an obvious way to save money and also be a deterrent for people who know they will have no right to claim and would therefore be returned to their country of origin. So many essential roles are done by hard-working teams from abroad taking on the work which we no longer want to do. From Jane Harding, Backstreet, St Cross, Winchester.
Thank you. After a brilliant evening at the Theatre Royal last Friday night, I would like to give a big thank you to the group of people who came to my aid when I tripped and fell over outside the library. The two gentlemen who helped me up and steadied me then walked me to my friend's car and assisted me in getting in. I've a swollen lip, grazes and a few aches, but no broken bones. Thank you once again. Jane Richardson, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
Thank you all. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@HampshireChronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you can also write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, first person, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with a warning shot over the Boomtown boughs. Nick.
Strong words from the police over Boomtown Fair. As we report on the front page, the premises licence for the annual event at the Matterley Estate is to be reviewed by Winchester City Council on Monday the 25th of November. The police are clearly unhappy about the way the event is being managed. Their submission to the council talks about the suspected fatal drugs overdose of a 22-year-old man, shocking statistics of 29 broken bones at this year's festival, and said it is unacceptable that the festival allows festival goers to enter the event with illegal drugs and that it cannot continue operating in the same manner. These are heavy words, not lightly thrown, and we are sure that the event organisers will have received a jolt that they must more adequately address these issues. The licensing committee will also take them very seriously, and its members have to at least consider whether the event has a future in its current form. At the moment, the police are calling for a tightening of the rules. Anyone caught with drugs will not be allowed in. Anyone already at the event caught with drugs will be evicted. But anyone who goes to Boomtown knows that illegal drugs are everywhere. Many people avoid the event for that reason. Many people are attracted to it for exactly the same reason. The question arises of what will the police do in reality? Are they going to increase their presence and the actions that they take? It would appear clear that unless Boomtown tightens things up considerably, they could be on a collision course with the police over future events. At the moment, this is a police warning shot across their bows. The Chronicle would not want to see the event go. It does bring a lot of legitimate and legal pleasure to a lot of people, and inconveniences a relatively small number, most of whom have learned to adapt and live with it.
Now, in first person this week, Kimberly Barber writes about AI in the newsroom. Yes, Jill.
Artificial intelligence, to many, it's a scary concept. To others, it's become a valuable tool in their lives. There's a lot of talk about AI's place in journalism and whether it should be part of any process. And I find a lot of unnecessary fear. I am often asked about it and how we are using it. My newsroom has been at the forefront of NewsQuest's use of AI. We have an AI-assisted reporter called Sophie Day. Sophie is a real person. Some of the longer-term readers will remember her from when she worked at the Hampshire Chronicle. She's been a journalist for also almost a decade. However, the AI role appealed to her because it would allow her to be at the forefront of technology while also being able to work from home and work regular hours. Her job role is AI-assisted reporter. However, she's probably more appropriately named an AI editor. She uses company-created AI, which is secure and filled with all our prompts and styles, to help her process a large number of stories. She checks and verifies to ensure that what AI produces is correct and in the style that our readers expect. To be clear, AI is not generating these stories. We are giving it something to work on. It's more helping in the editing and production. These are usually the smaller stories you'd expect to see in a local newspaper. Press releases from businesses, check presentations from charities, news from local schools, that sort of thing. Largely well written in the first place. However, the copy is usually in need of putting in our style and often summarising into a set word count. And it also needs processing. So it needs headlines, of which we write three different ones for each story. A social cell for social media, metadata ticked, pictures and captions adding, and a whole bunch of other administrative things that come with our stories these days. It's not as simple as writing 200 words on something and pressing go. There's lots more than what meets the eye. Over the years, dealing with these types of stories has become an increasing burden for our reporters. Email has opened the doors for a massive amount of communication. Dwindling staff budgets mean only a small number of people remain in our newsrooms, and dealing with the sheer scale of people who want to communicate with us, many of whom have not bought a newspaper recently, can quickly become overwhelming. Most reporters do not appreciate being tied to a desk, carrying out administrative duties or answering emails. They like to be out chasing stories, talking to people, asking questions, anything but sitting in the office. Most are drawn to local news because they are passionate about journalism. Let's face it, it can be a thankless task, long, unsocial hours and hard graft for low pay, especially as it takes, on average, 4 years to qualify. So you need to have a passion for it to be able to stick it out. The adoption of this scheme has freed up their time, and we are already seeing the benefits of them spending more time in the communities they serve, whether that's attending a council meeting, sitting through a case at court, or interviewing the owners of a new restaurant in person. It's been great to see them start to flex their wings, and I hope to see a better mix of news as a result. Sophie is not alone. She's part of a team working on NewsQuest's Southern titles. So far, the scheme has been adopted by the Southern Daily Echo, the Somerset County Gazette, Bridgewater Mercury, Western Mercury, and North Somerset Times. The team works remotely and covers for each other if someone is on holiday or training. A new reporter will join them in December when the Bournemouth Echo comes on board, and we are currently recruiting for a reporter to join the Dorset Echo. The scheme is growing, and while sitting at home working on a large number of stories might not be some journalist's dream job, others understand that they are doing work that's vital to helping newspapers better serve their communities. They are part of a team, and their presence is allowing local news to not just survive, but thrive.
Now, a letter from Westminster this week is from the Winchester MP, Danny Chambers. Paul.
In advance of Rachel Reeves' autumn budget, I joined my Liberal Democrat colleagues and called for a rescue package to boost NHS spending, invest in infrastructure, support public health services, and roll out free personal care. Thanks to this pressure and focus on health services, I was pleased to see a commitment in the budget to boost day-to-day NHS spending and investment in facilities across both the health and education sectors. However, as I've been saying almost non-stop in Parliament, we can't truly save the NHS without investment in social care too, and we only saw small funding boosts to care services. Of course, with increased spending and investment comes increases to taxes, and I was incredibly disappointed to see the bulk of new taxes being levied from small and medium-sized businesses. Winchester has a huge diversity of small and independent businesses. It's one of the city's great strengths and a big draw for visitors from across the whole country and beyond. To better understand the challenges for the High Street, I recently joined with Winchester BID, Business Improvement District, Director Paul Spencer, to visit a range of city centre businesses and learn directly from them how they're going to be affected and what impact the budget will have on their livelihoods, their staff, and their prospects for the future. We also know that this tax rise will affect healthcare providers like GPs, care homes, hospices, and social care providers. It seems totally counterproductive to increase health spending with one hand, only to take it away from providers with the other. Instead, we should be directing new taxes at the big banks, oil and gas industries, and the hugely profitable tech companies to get our public services working for us again. It's about time they paid their fair share. The government could have chosen to focus more of the new taxes on them. They chose not to. After 14 years of conservatives taking rural communities for granted and betraying farmers with dodgy trade deals, it seems this new government has failed to set things right. The changes to inheritance tax are going to hit so many family-run farms across Winchester and the Meon Valley. I campaign to stick up for farmers, and I'll continue to endeavour to be a true champion for our rural communities. As the colder months set in, I have, of course, not forgotten the injustice over winter fuel payments. I've heard from so many people worried about their loved ones this winter. So I'll continue to do what I can to ensure the issue remains on the agenda and we stand a chance of having the decision reversed. Just last week I spoke in Parliament on the issue again and told the government to reinstate the payment. Finally, it was a great honour for me to attend Winchester's Remembrance Sunday proceedings. It is so important for us to remember all those people from Winchester who join many others from across the country, the Commonwealth and the whole world to stand up and defend our liberty during two world wars. We must also never forget all those who fought in more recent conflicts and the veterans who live on. They did their duty. So it is our duty to ensure we take care of them and their families in every way we can. If you have any problems or issues, please contact me at Danny Chambers, MP at Parliament UK. My team and I will do our best to help.
And now Belgarum. Belgarum usually looks at Winchester life from an alternative angle. This week we're looking at danger spots. Nick.
Yes, the public has responded to a Belgarum story about the danger spots for pedestrians in Winchester. It highlighted Bridge Street, Chesil Street and North Walls as unpleasant places to walk. Nick Ray contacted Belgarum to highlight the horrendously dangerous Stockbridge Road rail bridge underpass at Winchester Station, which is barely one person wide, and any number of horrible pedestrian paths and crossings in Winchester, such as the dangerous mini roundabout at Clifton Terrace, Upper High Street, and St Paul's Hill spanning over the railway line. Why is Winchester so poorly provisioned for pedestrians? Marion Scheiser said, "Another spot I don't like is either side of the top of Cannon Street, on that side of the St Cross Road. The pavement is very narrow there and buses and lorries often come past. It's not quite so bad walking up, although I often feel as if I need to go close to the wall, but walking down is dreadful as one cannot see what is coming from behind." In Twyford, Tony Bronk says, "Consider Twyford High Street between Queen Street exit and Manor Road. Also, along Finch's Lane and Shawford Road, between the Queen Street Junction and the western side of the bridge over the River Itchen." And finally, Derek Selwood highlights the new layout of the junction of Clifton Terrace and Romsey Road. And of course that piece is accompanied by three pictures of narrow and broken pavements in Winchester.
Thank you. Now, let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. What have we got? Right, on Sunday, the 24th of November, there's a Christmas Makers Market at the Worthy Sports and Social Club at Loder Close, Winchester. That's at 10:30 a.m. and it's a massive makers market to buy those unusual and unique items for a special gift. On Sunday evening, Thomas Benjamin Wild Esquire, supported by the Sweet Chunks Band, are on at the railway. Thomas Benjamin Wilde has been delivering his brand of sing-along musical humour since 2016. Moving forward to Friday the 29th, there's a quiz evening. This is a charity event in aid of Winchester Go LD. It includes a light supper and a cash bar. Tickets are £20. And that's at the Twyford Village Hall, Hazley Road, Twyford. Sunday the 8th of December, the Diva Singers Christmas Concert. This is at 6 o'clock. Come and enjoy the Diva Singers 40th Anniversary Christmas Concert. Entry is free, with light refreshments after, and a retiring collection for church funds. And that's at St Margaret's Church, 103B Downs Road, Winchester. Saturday the 14th of December, we've got a celebration of carols by Alsford Community Choir. That's 7:30 p.m. Tickets are £15, and that's at St John the Baptist Church, East Street, Alsford. And the Diva Singers again, another Christmas concert on the 15th of December. This one is at 6 p.m. and this one is at St Mary's Church, Church Street, Mitchell Dever. So two opportunities to see the Diva Singers there. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 23rd of November, the sun will set at 4:07 p.m. and on Wednesday the 27th of November, the sun will rise at 7:42 a.m. and will set at 4:04 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Jill, would you like to kick us off, please?
Rick Stein Restaurant celebrates its first decade in Winchester. A Winchester restaurant where celebrities dine is celebrating its 10th anniversary. Rick Stein Winchester, a part of the Rick Stein Group, celebrated a decade of business on October the 31st and thanked customers in a Facebook post. The restaurant said, "Thank you to all those who've joined us over the years, from celebrating birthdays and anniversaries to wine dinners, masterclasses and supper clubs. It's been our privilege to be part of your memories, and we can't wait to raise a glass with you to many more." Rick Stein Winchester, which aims to bring the taste of Cornwall to Winchester, was the group's first to open outside of the West Country county. The restaurant serves seafood and receives a Cornish catch delivered daily. The Chronicle spoke to assistant manager Ellie Gregg, 25, about the restaurant's success. She said, I've been here for 7 years and I've worked as a waiter, a senior waiter, a supervisor and an assistant manager. And that's been through COVID and everything as well. So I've seen a lot of changes in the restaurant, which has been really, really nice. She added, Rick Stein came in for lunch yesterday. He was here with Hugh Bonneville, which was awesome, because I'd just seen Paddington the night before. The fact that he's still so involved with Jill Stein is still so involved, and the care and involvement they have with the company is one of the reasons why we have been so successful. Ellie is part of the group's backbone of long-standing staff and chose to not go to university because of the opportunities the group gave her. In her instance, the company paid for advanced wine qualifications, which has allowed her to grow her passion for the beverage. The assistant manager also asserted that despite the restaurant being part of a group, the central management is present and knows the team well. Even though we're 4 hours from Cornwall, we don't feel disconnected, and you don't just feel like you're part of a chain. You feel like you're part of the company.
Suicide of vet upset over pets being destroyed. A talented vet died after becoming increasingly distressed at wealthy customers unnecessarily asking him to put their animals down at Increst Herd. Dr. John Ellis was upset that people with new cars parked outside his surgery wouldn't pay to help their animals, the coroner was told. In contrast, a 35-year-old told his mother that clients who couldn't afford to pay for treatment often brought their pets in too late for anything to be done. His mother, Tina Ellis, a conservative councillor in Fareham, told an inquest into her son's death that he found this destroying. The inquest heard that Dr. Ellis had tricked a veterinary nurse into giving him the deadly medication by falsely claiming he needed it to put down a friend's large dog. Winchester's coroner's court was told that Dr. Ellis, who was working at a practice near the city, was experiencing considerable stress in both his professional and private life at the time of his death in November 2022. He was resident at Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists and told his mother he had been having trouble. He would sleep in his car sometimes when he was on call, rather than go home and have to drive to the vets in an emergency, and was under financial pressure as well.
Minister says action plan is on the way. Winchester Prison has been in the national spotlight in recent weeks. The gawk comments come weeks after a prison watchdog wrote to Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood to issue an urgent notification for improvement at the Category B jail after very poor inspection findings. As previously reported, the watchdog reported that drug use was rife, but that the prison's approach to testing was weak, and a third of CCTV cameras were broken, which compromised security. In a statement, Minister of State for Prisons, Parole and Probation, James Timpson, said, "The situation at Winchester illustrates the scale of the crisis the government inherited. Staff are already working hard to drive the improvements needed, and we will publish an action plan in the upcoming weeks to support their efforts." The Ministry of Justice declined to discuss the comments made by Mr. Gawk.
Council job cuts face flak. A union has said it is concerned about a move to fast-track cuts, as almost all of the staff at Hampshire County Council have been offered the chance to resign. All employees except school staff are being offered the option to apply to resign from the council in return for a payment, as the authority's budget faces immense pressure. The authority suggested the step has been taken to attempt to avoid compulsory redundancies. However, the Hampshire branch of the public service union Unison say that the move has been made without any communication or prior warning. A spokesman from Unison said, "We're concerned about this move to fast-track staffing reductions without any consultation. After a decade of increasing demands and well over £500 million in cuts, staff are already reporting that workload pressures are affecting their physical and mental health. We understand the issues local authorities face, but staff and unions should be consulted, and pension entitlements and notice periods must be honoured. While all staff can apply for the scheme, the council confirmed that each application will be considered individually against a set of criteria and will only be approved if services can be successfully maintained. A spokesman for Hampshire County Council said, "In common with many councils nationally, our budgets are under immense pressure as demand and costs continue to rise in vital areas such as social care for children and adults."
Village post office due to reopen after 4 months. South Wanston Post Office reopened on Monday, November the 18th, under new management. It offers 46 hours of post office services a week, with customers able to pay bills, make cash withdrawals, pre-order foreign currency and more. The reopening was after a four-month closure following the resignation of a former postmaster. Residents came along to see the reopening of the shop, which featured a performance from the Hampshire Caledonian Piper Band, as well as a barbecue and some free samples. The shop was officially reopened by Deputy Mayor Sudhakar Ahwal, who cut the ribbon. It will have the new opening hours of Monday to Friday 9 until 5:30 p.m. and Saturdays open 9 till 12:30. Good for South Wanston.
The former chief executive of the Theatre Royal in Winchester has died. Mark Curtis, 73, was a tireless and passionate supporter of the theatre and its importance to the community. Although he trained as a teacher and remained an engaging educator, he soon turned to a career in theatre. His first theatre job was as a house manager of the Royal Exchange Manchester. Over the years, many organisations benefited from his knowledge and enthusiasm. In the early 1980s, he was instrumental in the creation of Dance City in Newcastle, a home for English dance theatre. During the 1990s, he was the administrator of the Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, where he ensured there was sufficient funding to present a wide-ranging programme of new and classic drama. He also had spells in charge of Theatre Royal Brighton and New Theatre Royal Portsmouth, for which he obtained a lottery grant that enabled many improvements to the dilapidated building. From 2011 to 2016, he was chief executive of Theatre Royal Winchester. During his time there, Mark displayed his customary dedication to providing top quality theatre and educational activities, as well as being heavily involved in saving the much loved Hat Fair. After his retirement, he continued his lifetime commitment to helping others. Having been a volunteer with Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group since 2012, he began teaching English to refugees and asylum seekers and became chairman of the charity. Mark's love of theatre extended to his leisure time, when he liked nothing more than to see challenging drama in the company of his wife, Pauline.
Record number of Christmas gifts for children in need. A record number of Christmas shoeboxes have been sent to a depot ready to be delivered to disadvantaged children. On November the 2nd, 704 boxes from Winchester Rotary were delivered to Boscombe by club members Colin Cook and Tony Catesby. These will be added to the Wessex Rotary District total from around 50 clubs across the area. The district coordinator is sure that the final total will be more than 20,000, a 10% increase on last year. The boxes, filled with gifts, will go to children in Moldova, Montenegro, Romania, and those affected by the war in Ukraine. After reaching the depot, they are sent by lorries to reach the children by Christmas. Colin, who organises the Winchester effort, said, "The Winchester Rotary total is also 10% up on last year and our largest ever. Very many thanks to the 8 primary schools, 3 nurseries and many individual contributors who this year included staff at Sarum Road Hospital for the first time." The article is also accompanied by a large photo of Winchester Rotarian Nick Bell and 2 members of Winchester Rotaract checking the boxes before they're packed.
project offers support to Ukrainians seeking work. Ukrainians in the United Kingdom are struggling to find employment, and Winchester's community is by no means an exception. They have struggled to find employment, but a new initiative by Winchester City Council and Bridge to Unity is aiming to combat the issue. Employment workshops are being provided to the community to help people anxious about their level of English, the possibility of rejection, navigating a new country, and CV writing. Advertising the workshops, Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association said, "If you are tired of submitting your resume and getting no response, interview invites, or another rejection, or if you're finding it difficult to adapt to a new country and find your place in a different professional culture, employment workshops are designed to help and support you." Bridge to Unity is a charitable organisation that has established itself at the centre of refugee support and resettlement throughout the south of England. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Community and Engagement in the Winchester City Council, said, "We're pleased to support the delivery of the next round of employability workshops to our local Ukrainian community. The free workshops provide bespoke support to those seeking work with advice on interview skills and CV writing, whilst providing more information about the UK's job market. Earlier this year, we delivered similar employability training, which was successful and positively received by those who took part, with one Ukrainian securing a different role as an outcome of this support. So it is great that we're able to build upon this work to ensure that our community in Winchester feel empowered with the knowledge, skills and confidence to succeed in securing work, which is aligned to their skill set here in our district. The dates for the course at Winchester Library on Jury Street are in November 16th, 23rd and 30th. Almost gone past. Organisers note that get full support, attendees are expected to attend all three sessions to complete the course.
Eighth, Hampshire should be top of the list. The Telegraph has stuck its foot in it by releasing its annual ranking of England's counties and not crowning Hampshire as number one. Ranked best to worst, the list of considered 48 counties and measured them according to natural wonders, history and culture, luxuries, peace and quiet. Devon made it to the top, with Bedfordshire resigned to last place, just below Bristol and the City of London, which occupied places 47 and 46. Champions of Hampshire will be dismayed to discover it did not make the podium, falling one position from last year's 7th to 8th, although we can take some solace in being above Surrey and Wiltshire. He was not in his mayoral attire, but Mayor Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, 74, went into bat for Winchester's county and did not agree with the Telegraph's ranking. He said, "Cumbria has a fine landscape. You've got the Lake District and William Wordsworth. But we have John Keats. Hampshire should be right at the top. There's so much happening around here, and you've got a varied landscape. Chalk downs, lowland heath and green sandstone places." The Alsford resident also noted the county was very welcoming. He added, "I don't know what it is about Hampshire, but when they move in, people are accepted quite quickly."
Pupils at a Winchester school welcomed the Mayor of Winchester to award their hard work and dedication. Oslebury Primary School had the honour of hosting the Mayor, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, on Thursday, November the 14th, who presented the students with their Oslebury Challenge badges. These badges are a testament to the pupils' commitment and effort over the past 10 weeks. The Oslebury Challenge is a unique initiative aimed at motivating children to pursue personal growth and community involvement. Over a 10-week period, the pupils were tasked with developing a new skill, volunteering in their community and engaging in physical activity. Head teacher John Flynn said, "The Oslebury Challenge has been a fantastic way for our children to not only develop new skills, but also contribute to the community and stay active. We are incredibly proud of all our students for their dedication and enthusiasm throughout the programme. The school is keen to share its success with the wider community and invites anyone interested to visit and see the positive impact of the Oslebury Challenge." A school spokesperson said, "Whether it's learning about the Oslebury Challenge or seeing the creative and academic projects students are working on, we are proud of the school's achievements and the positive impact it is making on the local area."
Railway work to hit festive travel. Network Rail has announced extensive engineering works over the Christmas and New Year period. These works will affect services across the Wessex route, including parts of Hampshire, Surrey, Berkshire, Dorset, Devon, Somerset and Wiltshire. The upgrades are intended to improve the railway and make it more reliable. From Sunday, December the 15th until Sunday, January the 5th, engineers will be upgrading the railway between Basingstoke and Woking. This will result in no direct trains between Exeter and Salisbury and London Waterloo, and services between Waterloo and Southampton and Weymouth will be diverted, adding 45 minutes to journey times. Network Rail will be renewing the switches and crossings at Brookwood Junction, where the line to Ashvale and Aldershot leaves the South West Main Line towards Basingstoke. Other works include strengthening embankments at Ashmead and Hook, reducing the risks of landslips and improving drainage between Brookwood and Farnborough. The Sherrington Viaduct between Salisbury and Trowbridge will also be upgraded. This will result in bus replacing trains in many affected areas.
Ireland is a vital stronghold for the threatened red squirrel. The much-loved red squirrel is native to the UK, but has been pushed to the fringes by the arrival of its larger cousin, the grey squirrel. Now only living in a few isolated places across the UK, the red squirrel is now a protected species. With its smaller size, red-orange fur, and distinctive ear tufts that often appear in winter, the red squirrel is unmistakable. Its coat varies greatly, ranging from nearly blonde to almost black. In winter, its fur becomes thicker, and its bushy tail provides extra insulation, while in summer, the sleek coat and shed ear tufts reveal a leaner squirrel. During autumn, red squirrels are particularly active, making it the best time of year to see them. Amongst the fallen leaves on the woodland floor is a tree's rich bounty of seeds and nuts. The squirrels will feed voraciously to fatten up for the winter ahead, storing what they don't eat in underground caches for a later date. The decline of red squirrels began with the arrival of the grey squirrel in the 1800s. Grey squirrels outcompete their red counterparts for food and habitat, and they carry a squirrel pox virus, deadly to reds but harmless to themselves. Habitat loss has further compounded the issue. Fragmented woodlands force red squirrels to traverse open farmland and roads, exposing them to predators and vehicle strikes. The Isle of Wight remains a critical stronghold for red squirrels, protected by the Solent, which prevents the spread of grey squirrels to the island. Yet, even here, challenges persist. Landscape changes have reduced suitable habitat, and the fragmentation of these core habitats leaves squirrels vulnerable. Many squirrels are lost to vehicle strikes, and squirrels crossing open ground are at risk of predation. Crucial wildlife corridors linking woodlands are now more important than ever before to ensure that red squirrel populations can continue to thrive. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has taken action along the Eastern Yarra Nature Reserves, particularly between New Church Moors and Elverstone Mead. The Trust's hedge laying initiatives create wildlife corridors, enabling safe movement between habitats while also extending the life of hedgerows. One of the best places to see red squirrels is Elverstone Mead Nature Reserve. Managed by the Trust, this reserve boasts a thriving squirrel population and even features a dedicated squirrel hide for observation.
Free legal advice offer. Free legal advice sessions will be offered again after a successful pilot scheme. The University of Winchester and local firm Dutton Gregory LLP Solicitors will provide free advice on various legal issues. The sessions will cover family law matters, including divorce, separation, child-related disputes, and domestic abuse. Qualified lawyers will provide the advice, with trained law students assisting and learning from the experience. This initiative started earlier this year and was well received by the public. The Dean of the University's Faculty of Law Crime, Bill Davis, said, "Free legal work is often described as pro bono, which is a shortened form of the Latin phrase pro bono publico, which means for the public good. One of the university's core purposes is to serve the common good, and we hope this new project will provide much needed help for the people who use it. The university is now a member of LawWorks, a national charity that supports free law clinics. The project is coordinated by senior lecturer in law, Stephen Hurley, who is also a qualified solicitor." Mr. Hurley said, "We are delighted to be linking up once more with Dutton Gregory on this project, which proved a great success when it began in March. Our first series of advice sessions and provided a brilliant opportunity for the law students to gain real-world experience and client contact to complement their academic learning and to make a difference in their community."
The Crown Inn in Bishop's Waltham has been given a sparkle and opened doors once more to customers on November the 7th with a premium new look and feel. The Crown's building, located on the square, also has a claim to fame. A suite of rooms upstairs is named the Villeneuve Suite, after the admiral of the French naval fleet who was imprisoned in the building after being captured during the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805. An English heritage blue plaque on the exterior of the building marks his stay. Of the pub's history, the following is written on the Crown's website. After the Battle of Trafalgar, 1805, about 200 French prisoners were sent up to Bishop's Waltham. Among those captured were Admiral Villeneuve, who had commanded the combined French and Spanish fleet during the battle, and Ambroise Louis Garnaret, a French painter and writer. The admiral and the painter both stayed at the Crown Inn. Ambroise painted several of his sea pictures here from memory. A blue plaque was attached to the Crown Inn in 1997. The Crown Inn was once a popular place for cockfighting and also figured in the Bishop's Waltham beer riots of 1884. The riots were a result of the local curate's strong objection to the renewal of licences of some of the public houses. The rioters, having consumed way too much beer, threw the poor curate into the fish pond. Today, the Crown has all 8 boutique bedrooms named after the French ships or French admirals as a way of giving a gentle nod to the history of the place. The building is timber-framed and has traces of Tudor brickwork visible all around it, giving the pub a warm and historical look.
And festive fizz on offer at Guildhall Experience. A Christmas wine experience is returning to Winchester later this month. Vineyards of Hampshire's Festive Fizz event is coming to Winchester Guildhall on Saturday, November the 30th. The event, which will be held on a Saturday for the first time, will showcase Hampshire's finest still and sparkling wines. It will run from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m, giving ticket holders the chance to enjoy wine tasting, chat with vineyard representatives, and buy Christmas wine gifts. The event will feature wines from Black Chalk, Danebury, Exton Park, The Grange, Hambledon, Hattingley, Louis Pommery, England, and Rheims. Michael McKenzie, chairman of Vineyards of Hampshire, said, "The annual Vineyards of Hampshire Christmas event is always one of our favourites, taking place in the grandeur of Winchester's Bapsey Hall. The event will take place on a Saturday for the first time, and we can't wait for people to have the chance to sample the wines and to experience the gifting options we have in store for this festive season."
Fireworks, a charity blast. Winchester Roundtable has thanked volunteers for its most successful fireworks display yet. The display took place on Saturday, November the 9th at the North Walls Recreation Ground, following the traditional torchlight procession from outside the Guildhall through the city. According to the Roundtable, this year's event was the most successful one in its history, with the 20,000 tickets selling out and tens of thousands of pounds raised for local charities. The organisation wanted to thank everyone for their support and kind words, with this year's Winchester Roundtable chairman, Tony Blunn, saying he is utterly delighted with how the event went.
Exemplary mental health strategy. A 10-year mental health and dementia strategy has been hailed as an exemplary project. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust's Older People's Mental Health Teams have won the Royal College of Psychiatrists Team of the Year Older Age Adults 2024 Award. The programme has been recognised for creating an ambitious for older people and people with dementia, developing new models and services where there are gaps, and looking at best practice nationally and locally to determine the optimal models of care based on the changing population needs at a local level. The team have created a blueprint to transform the pathways to meet the population's needs now and over the next decade from 2024, which has been co-created with lived and learnt experience with enormous support from partner organisations. This is high level stuff. I just need to comment on the news, poor news, that Andover Mind, that worked across Hampshire for dementia patients and their families, has lost its funding from the County Council. So much for the strategy.
Youth's Key to Theatre Community. Chesil Theatre in Winchester has welcomed back its young thespians for another year of strong friendships, dramatic explorations and fun. Chesil Juniors, years 4 to 6, and Chesil Seniors, years 7 to 13, are a key part of the theatre's community. They meet separately, once a week, to develop an exciting play performed in the Chesil Theatre. As well as this, Chesil Youth get amazing opportunities to perform alongside the adult company. For example, the biannual summer outdoor productions, which in past years have included Treasure Island, Midsummer Night's Dream and Wind in the Willows. Chesil Youth have been the ensembles to the lead role in many of these productions, providing great acting and backstage experience for them.
Recycling Fashion for Global Good, an article contributed by Lucy Ramswell of Peter Simmons College. Do you ever find yourself wearing the exact same outfits every day? Interchanging a jumper or t-shirt, chucking on a slightly different version of the same old jeans? It's a tale as old as time, We will forever be wanting new clothes, trendy clothes, clothes that will magically make us fit in and stand out in precisely the right quantities. And if you, like the average human being, feel just a twinge of guilt donating your hard-earned pounds to another villainous fast fashion company, what's the solution? Of course, we could all invest thousands into a sustainable wool jumper made from mushrooms and biofuel, or you could always take a stroll into the second-hand side of life. With websites such as Vinted and Depop offering clothes from a variety of brands for a fraction of the price, style on a budget appears attainable. However, shipping and site fees can occasionally make the price higher than new, and buying from strangers will always add a slight risk. Not to mention that many of the brands listed are fast fashion regardless. Therefore, you'll end up buying clothes that will not stand the test of time, stroke, washing machine. Perhaps charity shops are the best option then. It's a moral double whammy. Preventing unwanted clothes from piling up at landfills and giving money to a variety of worthy causes. But with limited stock and sizing, you often have to be lucky to stumble upon the right find. I asked my fellow students to see if second-hand is always the best option for young people. I prefer second-hand shopping, both due to its environmental benefits and its cost-effectiveness, said Ava Cockings, a first-year A-level student. However, I can see the tedium it can bring for some, spending time trekking through multiple shops and not always finding what you came looking for. I'm not saying that just one person ambling into an Oxfam will miraculously solve climate change and the issue of fast fashion. But perhaps a shift to more sustainable shopping habits could hold the key to individuals producing a global impact.
Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have time for this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thank you to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Jill Russell.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns. Thank you for listening. And until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.